Previously on the Skip and Josh Sports Show.
I know me and you have talked about this for 20 years. If the guy's in your starting lineup, obviously you think he's better than the guys on your bench. So why don't you just let him hit?
Yeah, it's the lefty-righty thing.
I guess he thought it's the lefty-righty thing, but I mean...
You're listening to the Skip and Josh Sports Show.
Hey, Skip, how's it going?
It's going great.
I was, we were texting during Game 7 of the World Series.
Yeah, we were texting all week.
I knew that when we recorded this episode, I think we could probably do like a two-hour World Series recap, maybe an hour of that just on Game 7, and then maybe a half an hour of that just on like, you know, one inning of the game, you know, but...
This episode might be 90% baseball and 10% other stuff.
Yeah.
Which is fine. Because we won't get to talk much about baseball for the next few months anyway, so it works out.
I was taking notes like crazy. Just trying to remember all the things I wanted to talk about that baseball game.
Yeah, now when I watch sports, I have to write things down because I know we're going to talk about it on our podcast at the end of the week.
I know. I'm at home most of the day, so like I'm literally just like writing stuff down in a little notepad. But I mean, I know if you like you in an office, like you probably have your phone out taking little notes on your, you know, on your phone and stuff.
Well, I'm usually taking notes at night because that's when the games are on. So I don't really do much during the day. It's either at night or on weekends. It could be during the day, but so let's first talk a little bit about hockey.
Yeah,
get that out of the way. Canadians were on a huge roll. Everyone was talking about you know, how they're in first place and best record in the league, and you know, I don't know how many points they had. And then of course all of a sudden yesterday on a Friday night when they normally don't even play. And by the way, I got the game again for some reason.
We'll have to look into that.
I mean, it's still happening. So maybe I'll just keep getting them all season long, but I'm not complaining. So the Habs get blown out 10-0. In a game like that, there's not one single player that's not to blame. They're all to blame. So I'm not going to sit here and tell you that Al Montoya is the reason. Obviously, none of his teammates showed up either.
I really felt bad for Montoya because, like, in a normal... I mean... Normally, your goalie gets taken out, but they're playing Philadelphia tonight. So the idea was to rest Price. So they just made sure they rested Price. So Montoya was kind of sacrificed, you know, which kind of sucks for him. But
yeah, it does suck for him. But I mean, realistically, they did the right thing. If you're planning on resting a goalie, then rest the goalie.
Yes.
I mean, because that game last night was out of hand, you know, what, 5 minutes into the game. So there was no point in pulling the goalie in. And again, I don't even think half the goals are probably not even Montoya's fault. But in any case, a few other notes about the Habs I wanted to mention. They sent down Sergachev.
Yeah, Sergachev.
Sergachev, is that how you pronounce it?
That's how they say it here.
Okay, so they sent down Sergachev. The only good thing about that is that every time I saw him on the ice, I thought I was looking at Steve Shutt because he wears 22.
It's great.
So now I won't be confused anymore.
Well, I mean, they always knew they were going to send him down. It's like he went back down to junior. They could only keep him up for a certain amount of time. So it just goes to show they really don't have much faith in any of the other defensive prospects in their organization. And this guy who they drafted just this year, 18 years old, they see a lot in him. And I mean, there was no point in him staying up. He's going to do better. Look, he's going to go down. He's going to play in the Memorial Cup for sure this year because Windsor's the host and they know they're in. So he's going to be in the Memorial Cup. He's going to play for Russia in the World Junior. So like he'll get a lot of good experience. It's all good with him.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't have a problem with any of the top six defensemen on the Canadiens anyway. So I have faith in all six of them. So I'm not really worried. Of course, there's injuries and stuff that happen during the season, but I guess we'll worry about that when that happens.
Did you see the plus minus last night in the 10-0 game?
Well, they were all minuses. Who was the worst?
Well, a bunch of guys were minus four, but Weber and Emelin were zero. They were not minus, which in a 10-0 game is pretty incredible.
That so, is incredible.
Yeah. So, I mean, it was a disgusting game. I turned it off after 4-0. And I mean, it's almost like every Canadiens fan is like was waiting for something bad to happen. You know, it was this big deja vu sense. The season was unfolding the same way it did last year. Crazy hot start. And then now, like, just to go in and just get spanked by Columbus like that, a total no-show. It's pretty embarrassing for the team, for the coaches, for everybody. And I listened to a little bit of the post-game show, the radio here in Montreal, and it's like the fans are just, it's unbelievable some of the stuff you hear. Fire this guy. Well, they're 9-1-1, so you don't normally fire a coach at 9-1-1, right? Get rid of the, I mean, like, everything's been working for 10 games, so it's hard to like have this knee-jerk reaction after one huge loss. But I do understand the panic of the Habs fans because it's like everyone was waiting for the other shoe to drop.
I think it's a good thing, to be honest. I mean, if you're going to lose, you might as well lose 10-0. I hate losing 1-0 or 3-2 or whatever, like in overtime or in shootout. It's more frustrating. And you know what? This might be a little wake up call. This is might be what the team needed. So, I mean, not that they weren't playing well, but better to have, you know, one really bad game than have a, you know, a week or two of not really good games.
Yeah. You know, there's one big quote that I always remember. It was from last year. It was like after the fifth game of the year or something. It was against Buffalo. And Steve Ott said, the Canadiens, like they asked him about, like, oh, they're the top team in the league and everything. He's like, well, no, they have no system. Their system is the goalie. And a lot of people took offense to that because at the time there was this whole narrative going on, like, oh, the Canadiens are playing great. They're not relying on the goalie. They're a good team. And then, of course, that all went out the window because when the goalie got injured, they were completely useless. So that quote ended up being completely true. And then the same story started again this year. Oh, no, they're not relying on the goalie. Montoya played great. You know, they used Montoya for four games already this year besides last night, and they won them. So, and they had played well in most of the games, but you know, the last few games you're seeing the old patterns emerging. You know, they can't get the puck out of the zone. There's no transition. They basically have no centers. They can't win faceoffs. And then basically it's let the Carey Price, you know, win the game for you. I mean, that's all we've seen. You know, that's what we saw the last for several seasons, and it's kind of unfortunate. It's so many people blame the coach. There's so much pressure on the coach here. I mean, I'm definitely not a fan of the coach, but I don't know if another coach would do better, to be honest.
Well, again, I'm not jumping to conclusions. It's one loss. It's fine. It's not the end of the world. The Canadiens weren't going to win 82 games anyway. One somewhat unrelated note about the Canadiens. I mentioned how every time I saw Sergachev, is that how you pronounce it?
Sergachev.
Sergachev. Every time I saw him, I thought I was seeing Steve Shutt out there. Every time I see Jeff Petrie, I think I'm seeing Mats Naslund. It's crazy.
Jeff Petrie's a pretty good player, but certainly no Mats Naslund.
Different guy, different, definitely different guy, and he's taller too.
You know that his father is Dan Petrie, the ex-pitcher from the Tigers.
I didn't know that.
You didn't know that?
I didn't know
Yeah,
that.
he's American.
Oh,
His father,
I mean,
World Series winner, 1984 Tigers.
there you go.
I used to like him in Strat-O-Matic.
The Skip and Josh Sports Show. They don't take your calls.
So let's switch gears to football now. Because we need to save a lot of time to talk about baseball later.
A lot of good games this week. I know I give the end, like, maybe the season's heating up a little bit. I don't know. There's some good matchups this week. I don't know if I'll spend the whole day Sunday in front of the TV, but the Sunday night game is really intriguing with Broncos Raiders. You know, Broncos with their crazy defense, and the Raiders are just and such an interesting team. You know, their quarterback's getting a lot of talk about, you know, he's the next big star, and they had 22 penalties last week and they still won. So it's like they're an interest seem to be an interesting team to watch.
Yeah, when was the last time anyone said that the Raiders were an interesting team to watch? It must have been over a decade ago, I
Well,
think.
the last time a Broncos Raiders game was relevant, it was, you know, John Elway versus Marcus Allen, you know, going back to the old days of the when the AFC West was like super interesting, right?
Did the Raiders play in the Super Bowl against Tampa Bay like over a decade ago? Am I
Yeah,
dreaming that?
they did. There was Rich Gannon was the quarterback, Tim Brown,
That's right.
but the Tampa won. So that was everyone always talks about like the weakest Super Bowl winners, and Tampa's always brought up as, you know, as that.
So here's what I wanted to talk about with regards to football. I want to recap our pigskin pick'em from last week.
You're doing good. You should be putting money. You should be betting.
I should be putting money, because I was I had 9 correct picks out of, I think, 13
games.
It's
crazy.
Last week.
It's crazy. You need to like do some. What do they have in Ontario? They have what is it
called? Proline.
Proline. You got to put
Proline,
some Proline.
You can't make any mistakes though. You have to pick at least 3 games, and you have to pick them all right. So I mean, I could have played Proline, and I would have had, who knows, 2 out of 3 right or 3 out of 4 right, and then I would have lost the whole ticket. I went 9-4 last week against the spread, which apparently that's amazing.
It is.
Because if I had bet on every game, I'd be up. Right. But let's see how long this lasts. I'm not going to, you know, spend my entire mortgage on gambling just yet. Just to let the listeners know, you had 5 correct games.
Not good.
The week earlier, the week prior to that, you had 6, so you're going in the wrong direction.
No, but I never claimed to be a, you know, it's a crapshoot.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. This week, both of us got the Thursday night game correct, so we're both off to good starts.
Good.
We'll see what happens. I know I've already made my picks for the weekend. I think you have as well.
Yeah.
And a little bit of a fantasy football recap. Last week, I won my game. So I've won 3 in a row.
Oh, shoot. You're on fire.
I'm on fire, except this week I'm playing a team who's 8-0.
Oh, God.
So
Those guys are unbeatable.
It's our Philadelphia correspondent.
Yes.
And the good thing is, yes, they're 8-0, but they've got a lot of good players on a bye week, as does my team. So
anything
really
can happen.
Really, the teams that we're fielding, both of us, they're not our real teams. I have 4 starters that I can't use. He has 4 starters that he can't use.
You know, I met some guys this summer that play fantasy football, and they do a different format, which I think it's something I'd like to maybe do next year, where every week you play 2 games.
I've heard of this.
Yeah, and I think it's way more fair, right? Like, it's fair in terms of, like, if you bump up against a hot guy, and, you know, you get 100 and you lose 105 to 100, you know, it's not fair because you would have beaten pretty much everybody else. But then also maybe, you know, you come up with a guy that has all his bye week, you know. I don't know. It just should even it out a little bit. Maybe we'll try it next year.
Yeah, I don't know if the website we use has that capability, but I'll look into it.
The guy I talked to I think they paid for a site specific for it.
Okay. But. I mean, listen, you still only have to set 1 lineup, so it's not like you have to do double the work to set your lineup. You're just playing against 2 different teams, so
yeah.
It should work. Your game last week, you actually you had a big game. You won 96-71.
Yeah. Huge.
So you're not
I'm not
out of
dead,
bets.
But I can't afford any losses.
No, you can't afford any losses, and let's see who you're playing this week. You're playing another 2-6 team, and you're already up 21-10 after the Thursday game.
Yeah.
So, and both of you have 8 guys left on the weekend. So there's still hope for you.
Yeah. It's funny because I have Brady and Roethlisberger. So Roethlisberger's hurt. Brady's on a bye. So I actually had to pick up a quarterback.
Who'd you pick up?
Jameis Winston. They got killed, but he had a good game on Thursday.
So, but I heard rumors that Roethlisberger might play.
I couldn't take a chance. They said he was a participant in practice. He didn't take all the snaps, but he was a partial participant in practice. Which,
so is that
going to
be a game time decision?
I guess. I mean, Steelers fans are crossing their look. This guy needs to be healthy. They're not going anywhere without Roethlisberger, and they're playing Baltimore this week, which is a huge rivalry. So that's always a crazy physical game. I don't know if I'd put Roethlisberger in this week if he's not. I mean, if he's not 100%, you don't play him. There's no way.
Yeah, there's no need. They're in a bad division. You're right.
Yeah. And the Monday night game is actually pretty interesting this week. Bills Seahawks, because the Bills are like a bit of a circus show, and I can't stand the Seahawks, so I'll probably watch.
When they made the schedule 6 months ago, why did anyone think the Bills would be an interesting team to watch on Monday night football?
But the Monday night games are terrible. You know, like, they're really bad. The Sunday night games are the new Monday night games, right?
Yeah, but you would think that there'd be some good Monday night games also.
Well, you would think, because ESPN is paying $1 billion for the rights to Monday Night Football. So you'd figure that they would have maybe a little bit of say in terms of the schedule or getting matchups. But it doesn't seem to be that way, you know. And you know, you've heard all the articles, and I mean, Tony Kornheiser devoted like a whole hour practically to talking about it this week, about how the ratings of NFL are so low, and partially it's due to some. I mean, partially it's due to they went up against the World Series, which was killing in the ratings, and a lot of it is just bad matchups. Just bad games on. No one watches the Thursday night games. The Thursday night games are getting killed in the ratings every week. Half the time, no one's watching. And Monday night football is like, no one cares about it anymore.
Speaking of ratings, you were saying how the World Series was doing better than the NFL, which is unheard of. But it was, and you're right, Tony Kornheiser did talk about this. The Sunday night game, mm-hmm. what was Dallas and Philly.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Dallas, I think, is the number one draw when it comes to television ratings in the United States.
Dallas wins the ratings anytime they're on,
no matter who they're playing.
Yeah,
and this past Sunday they were playing Philly, that also draws really well.
Right.
So that game should have blown out the World Series easily. Usually it would in past years, and this year it didn't. And I think a little bit of that has to do with the fact that, you know, the Cubs are a great story and the Indians are a great story. I mean, if it was, you know, Minnesota versus Atlanta in the World Series, I don't know that that would have beat Dallas Philly. But anyway,
Cubs being in it is a huge factor. It's such a big story, you know. Like, I think there's tons of people watching baseball that don't normally watch, you know. So
and I bashed MLB a week ago for starting their game so late. I'm going to stick to that because I don't know how many kids were able to stay up to watch the end of the World Series, which ended past midnight Eastern time. And I know that it went into extra innings, and I know that there was a rain delay, but still, they might want to consider starting their games at 7 o'clock, at least on the weekdays, and then maybe even having some day games on weekends.
Especially during the regular season. During the regular season, games are always on at 7 or 7:30. So why change it all of a sudden?
You know? Well, a lot of things change when the playoffs start. Like, for example, look at all the days off you have during the playoffs. You really only need, in some cases, a 3 or 4 man rotation.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, there's so many things that change during the playoffs. But that's probably for a What Bugs Me segment later on in the year.
For sure.
Hi there. Skip and Josh will be right back. To get in touch with them, you can send them an email to skipandjoshshow@gmail.com. You can follow them on Twitter @skipandjosh, and you can visit their website at www.skipandjosh.com. And now, back to the show.
So let's get into the World Series. I don't even know where to start because there's so much to talk about.
I mean, I think it was the best World Series I've seen in my life.
It was. I don't know if it was the best one, but it was certainly an exciting one. Like, I was glued to the set every game.
Yeah. I mean, and just like Francona, Joe Maddon, it was so much like the debating of the moves, especially Maddon with the pitching, you know, using Chapman in game 6, overusing him, and then coming back with him again. And there was like so much. I mean, baseball is the ultimate second guessing sport, right? I mean, it's made for that. So, I mean, Maddon took a lot of heat, and he's damn lucky that he won because a lot of people are still questioning all the moves he made.
Yeah, I'm gonna rip both managers on today's episode. I don't know who I should start with. Joe Maddon made it clear that he only trusted one guy in his bullpen, maybe two.
And one. So, just one. There's only one.
Well, he did trust Edwards a little bit.
Only when he had to.
Who I thought was a race car driver. I didn't realize was a baseball player.
It was a combination of like a hamburger fast food restaurant and a race car driver.
There you go. Thank you. Perfect. So, but here's what I don't understand. I, the Cubs won the World Series, so I'm going to second guess and third guess and do whatever I want, but they did win the World Series, so you can't really argue with anything Maddon did because they won. But if it's true that all he trusts is Chapman, then why does he take his starters out of the game so early, especially when they're cruising? Like, Arrieta was cruising in his last game, didn't need to come out, and he hadn't even reached 100 pitches. And same thing with Hendricks. Hendricks was cruising, didn't have to come out. He was nowhere near 100 pitches. If you don't trust your bullpen, especially if you're playing in American League Park where your pitcher doesn't have to hit, why are you taking him out?
He completely overmanaged Game 7. I think he came into Game 7 thinking, this is my plan. Hendricks is going 5 innings. Then Lester's coming in. Then Chapman's coming in. And like, there was no deviation from that plan. although he, you know, like that he had a plan and he was going to stick to it no matter what. But it was so stupid because the game evolves. If you come in with a plan, you know, you're trying to stick a round peg into a square hole. You come in with a plan, but when the game starts changing and things start happening, you need to be able to move with the game, right? And there was, like you said, there's no reason to take Hendricks out. Hendricks probably could have pitched a complete game and the Cubs would have won the game seven, and we would have been denied all this great drama.
Exactly. And honestly, like bringing in Lester and Ross when he did, that could have cost him the game on two fronts. First of all, Lester can't hold runners on.
It's funny how he can only pitch to Ross.
And he can only pitch to Ross, and Ross made a throwing error on the first batter when it was you know, squibbed in front of the plate. So he made that throwing error that cost him a run. So I mean, I really don't understand the move. And they even said, you know, everyone knew that Lester was going to come to the game at some point, but he was going to start an inning. He wasn't going to come in the middle of an inning.
Yeah, and he brings him in the middle of an inning.
If you go back to the previous batter, the last batter that Hendricks faced, yes, he walked that guy. But I remind you that it was 0-2 on that batter. And the third ball was a very questionable call. It should have been a strike, in my opinion. So it wasn't like Hendricks was wild and he couldn't get anyone out. He'd gotten the first two batters out. He had two strikes on the next guy. I'm sure he could have finished that inning. And he probably could have gone at least another inning.
He looked fine. Like I said, he probably could have pitched the whole game.
And then, of course, in game six, when...
Game six was the worst. Game six is where Madden started. It's where everything started. Everything, all the mistakes he made in game seven is because of the stupidity of game six.
Exactly. You have a 7-2 lead. You don't need to bring in your best pitcher, especially when you have a game the next day.
In the seventh inning, he brings him in. Like, and as if he's holding on such a tight lead, you know? Like, it's a blowout.
Now, I understand the seventh inning, the Indians had the meat of their order coming up. So I sort of get that. But then you let him get out of that inning, and then you take him out.
Of course.
You let someone else throw 50 pitches or whatever it was that he threw in the eighth and the ninth. I mean, anyway, I'm not going to...
What do you want to rip Francona for? I don't know. Well, I think Francona was good.
Well, that's what I was going to get to. Thanks for reminding me. So in game... let me see what game it was. I think it was game five. That which game was it that Trevor Bauer pitched? Was it game five or six?
Game five.
Game five. So Trevor Bauer. So if you look at Trevor Bauer's stats, I realize you don't know what's going to happen before it happens.
Right.
But if you look at Trevor Bauer's playoff stats, even before he had the whole incident with his pinky, look at his stats. I looked them up. He was brutal in the postseason. And I realized that, you know, two of their starters were injured and out for the season. Although Salazar was on the World Series roster, by the way.
He pitched in relief.
So you've got Salazar on your World Series roster. You also have a guy who, granted, may have only thrown 11 innings all season in Ryan Merritt.
Yep.
Okay. But Ryan Merritt showed that in a pressure situation against the Blue Jays, he pitched great. And so you've got Trevor Bauer, who has not pitched one good game in the entire postseason this year. And he kept trotting him out there, and he kept trotting him out there. You know, I would have used Ryan Merritt and or Salazar for game five.
Yeah.
That's where I'm faulting Terry Francona.
I guess. I mean, it's hard to say. I mean, Bauer's kind of, he's been in the rotation all year. He's taking his turn. But yeah, I mean, he had enough faith in Merritt to go up in the biggest pressure game against the Jays, right?
So why didn't he have enough faith in him to go up against the Cubs?
I don't know. It's a really good question. I mean, Francona's going to have to live with that for, you know,
I mean, he was on the World Series roster and he didn't appear not even for an inning, not even for a batter. So, I mean, you have him on the roster.
Yeah. And their bullpen's so deep that he's never going to come in middle relief, right?
No, exactly. But, you know, you can start. I mean, how many innings did Trevor Bauer last in any of his starts? I'm going to look it up as we're speaking.
I don't think he got out of the fifth most times because they have such a quick hook, because they know they can bring in Ryan. They can bring in Miller for, I was going to call him Ryan Miller. They know they can bring in Andrew Miller for 2-3 innings and then, you know, and then get to the closer. So,
yeah, I'm looking at Trevor Bauer's game log for the postseason. So again, and this goes back to even before he had the whole pinky incident.
Yeah.
His longest outing was 4 2/3 innings. That was in the Boston series before he had the pinky incident. So, I mean, he didn't show that he was capable of doing anything. And, you know, maybe Terry Francona, like you said, he's been in the rotation all year. You got to go with the guy. But I mean, again, he used Merritt in the previous series. I don't know why you wouldn't use him in the World Series if he's on your roster. You yeah. obviously thought highly enough to put him on your roster.
Right. It's funny though, because they're such different teams, right? Like one team has such a deep bullpen and the other one had no bullpen.
Also, I mean, I don't think also the Cubs starting pitching was much better. And in my opinion, the Cubs batting order was much better as well.
Oh, way better. Way better.
Here's another thing I want to. I'm switching gears a little bit here. And I know you noticed this because we were texting about it during the game. Terry Francona pulled a Joe Maddon, and he had this crazy shift on Schwarber.
Yeah.
Almost as if he knew exactly where Schwarber was going to hit the ball.
He still got two hits right
there. He still got two hits, like right by the second baseman who was playing shallow right field. I mean, they have a shift on him, and they still can't get the guy out.
He's a monster.
I was amazed by that. Good for Kyle Schwarber.
You know what bugged me about what was so interesting about the Cubs is what the hell happened to Hector Rendon? I mean, they only got Chapman in July, and they were in first place in July. So their closer, Rendon, who they used for like, you know, half the season, he just disappeared. You know, he came in, he was brutal down the stretch, and like they went out and got Chapman for a reason. And this guy, like, he pitched, I think, one game in the first, I think he pitched in game one, he got killed, and then we never saw him again. Right, so
I'm gonna look up his stats while you're talking.
They got one. He pitched one game in the World Series, and they got killed, and then they didn't use him again. Which they, of course, they shouldn't. But I just find it amazing that like they only got Chapman in July. You know, they were in first place all year. I don't know what they did with their bullpen all year. I mean, obviously, he used more than just Chapman. You know, for 162 games, right?
Yeah, I mean, once Chapman got there, I guess Rendon was,
Yeah, and I mean, I guess when it gets to the playoffs, it's like everything's shorter, everything's like condensed, and he was really going to his go-to guys. But he had only one go-to guy. It was crazy.
So he actually appeared, Rendon appeared in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 games yep. in the postseason.
Yeah. His ERA is like 20?
His cumulative ERA was 4.5.
Yeah.
So he pitched against the Giants 3 times. He pitched against the Dodgers twice, and he pitched against Cleveland twice, actually.
Oh.
Only like 2 1/3 innings.
Right.
One of his outings, he pitched the third of an inning, and he gave up an earned run.
Right.
So,
right.
And then the next outing, he pitched 2 innings and didn't give up anything.
No confidence. I mean, he has confidence in Chapman, and that's who he went with. He didn't really feel comfortable going with anyone else. But like you said, you can second guess, but they won, so.
That's the case. You just leave your starter in there longer. And I mean, again, both Hendricks and Arrieta in their last starts, I think were like at around 80 pitches.
Yeah.
Knowing that there wasn't any more starts for them. It was their last start of the season. So just let them go.
Right. Like, you know, you've heard me say before, the role of the manager in Major League Baseball, I feel like the manager actually does very little. Like, there's not big difference from one manager to the next, and a good manager versus a bad manager doesn't affect that much over the course of a 162 game season, but a bad manager could really, really mess you up. And Maddon almost outfoxed himself, you know, in the last two games.
You're listening to Skip and Josh Sports Show.
I wanted to tell you something, an observation that I had. Did you see all the interview? Well, first of all, we'll go in chronological order. And I want to know if you notice this, because you always notice all the minutiae of everything. And you always find out, see little things that a lot of people don't see. So I'm sure you noticed that Anthony Rizzo put the ball in his pocket after the third out.
100% I noticed that.
And did you see that as the ball was coming to Bryant on that little chopper, he was smiling. As he was fielding the ball, he was smiling. As he threw the ball, he was smiling. These two guys are they're amazing for baseball because they are just little kids. They're little kids playing an adult game, right?
And they are. They're 22, 23.
I know, but you know what I mean? They're having fun. They're having fun out there, these two guys, you know? And it shows. I'm happy that they won. But, like, these two guys are just, they're a joy to watch, you know? Seeing Bryant fielding the ball, he has a smile on his face. And as he's throwing to Rizzo, he has a smile on his face. And then Rizzo puts the ball in his back pocket as they're celebrating. It was so good.
I think Rizzo also kept the ball from the clinching game in the NLCS.
Oh, I didn't even know that.
I think he kept it as well, because I think the last out was at first base as well. So he's got both of those baseballs now.
And so you know that I trashed Jason Hayward the other day. But in the interviews, both guys, Bryant and Rizzo, both said the same thing. They said that that was the best rain delay that ever happened for them, because it gave them a chance to regroup after they blew the lead. And Jason Hayward, they both mentioned him by name in the interviews, saying that he's the one that called the meeting in the clubhouse during the rain delay and got everybody together and rallied everybody together. So props for that. Just goes to show, maybe if he's not doing it on the field, he tried to lift up his team in other ways, which is pretty cool for him.
He's, other than Ross, he's like the veteran on the team.
Yeah,
which, he's not exactly an old guy, but you know, at least he's good for that. And you know, next season he can have a bounce back season, so who knows?
Yeah, he could. I mean, he's the classic guy that scouts love, right? Huge guy, big arm, tons of power, can run. Like they always say, like the five tool player. The problem is the tool that he's missing is he can't hit. Right? So that being able to have an at bat and grind an at bat and get a hit is a skill. Right? It's not, you can't just look at physical, like 6'4", 220, you know, like all the numbers. Like hitting is a skill. And right now, either he doesn't have it or he's just, you know, in a slump.
I need to ask you an important question. I should have asked you after game one of the World Series.
Yeah.
Were you watching the Fox feed or were you watching the MLB feed?
I was going to ask you the same thing. I had it written down to ask you the same thing. I was watching the Fox feed.
So was I. And I don't even know if the other feed was good or not, but I'm glad I watched the Fox feed. And I don't know why there are two different feeds.
In case people are wondering, if you're not in Canada, because we have our own Canadian sports network, so they get the international feed, which is for, I don't know, maybe it's for other countries besides us, but because we also get Fox, we get the Fox feed. So I did watch on Fox. I found they were way better. And as soon as I saw Buck Martinez on the other feed, I never went back to it. I was like, Buck Martinez? No, we'll go to Fox. I can't listen to that guy.
Fox had certain players mic'd up for different
mm-hmm.
games.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if you remember in Game 7, David Ross was mic'd up. This was before he was in the game. And I don't know if it was Rizzo or Bryant. One of them
went up to him
in the dugout saying how he was like freaking out. He couldn't even breathe. He was so stressed. And Ross is just standing there telling him to calm down, to keep breathing, like as if he's been there before, which he has. He's won a World Series. He's like, yeah, it's going to get worse in the ninth inning.
Yeah, I saw that. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I honestly never went back to the other feed. Plus, what was great that we had two feeds is that we actually got all the Fox programming, you know, like so the post game and the pregame, the panel that they had is just gold, right? With Frank Thomas and Pete Rose and A-Rod. I mean,
well, I know
it's a cast of characters. Like how does some executive at Fox say, yeah, let's put together this panel and we'll have Frank Thomas. Yeah, sure. Okay. And well, why don't we get A-Rod? Okay. And then why don't we just throw in Pete Rose? Right.
I wonder what Major League Baseball thought of having A-Rod and Pete Rose on that panel.
Do you notice that their set was outside, right?
Oh, they weren't allowed in the stadium.
And Pete Rose is not allowed in.
Oh, that's right. He's not allowed in any baseball stadium.
So they were outside, and then when it was raining, they put like a little tarp over them.
That's hilarious.
So that was cool. But their panel was great. I've really found their panel great. And they actually really – there was something that really bothered me in the game in that stupid squeeze bunt. Like, what was that? Two strikes and they try to lay down a bunt? Like, it made no sense.
The reason they did it, they knew that if he fouled it off, it's a strikeout. And so the runner is not going to be out if he's caught up between third and home.
Right.
So it was kind of like, if there's ever a good time to do it, it's with two strikes.
That. I understand that.
But the only problem, he didn't execute properly. He didn't square around properly. And he's been in a slump. hitting wise.
Yeah,
so
he's that, way over aggressive, Baez. He's way, way over aggressive the whole, like, the whole World Series.
Yeah, I mean, even it was interesting. The I don't know if it was Smoltz or Joe Buck, but one of them even said before it happened, yeah, this is a good opportunity for a squeeze play.
But it's funny because, like, I guess Smoltz and Joe Buck didn't feel so strongly about it. But on the panel with A-Rod and Frank Thomas and Pete Rose, they were, like, going after that play. Like, they did not like it at all. Of course, the second hindsight is 20/20, you know? And, you know, it didn't work, so of course it sucked. But, I mean, he lays down – if he gets a bunt down there and the run comes in, it's like Joe Maddon's gold, Baez is great, everything's roses and unicorns, you know?
Yeah, and then I mentioned how bringing in Lester and Ross, you know, it almost came back to bite them. It actually did come back to bite them, and then Ross hits a solo homer to sort of save Joe Maddon's ass.
Ross is great. I mean, come on, it's so good. The fact that he hit a home run, and you're right, he had a lot of trouble in that when he came in to catch. It seemed like he took a ball off his head on that pass ball. Two runs came in. It was I texted you, double broken window.
Yeah.
Right? Double. Like God. It was just such an exciting game, and then that rain delay just got the tension up, and Rajai Davis, I mean, that guy can't hit a home run. That guy cannot hit a home run.
I'm actually gonna look up his stats, see how many homers he hit this year.
There's no way he hit more than 8.
Okay, we'll keep talking, I'll look it up.
There's no way. I mean, he doesn't even start all the games for them. And he just, the thing with Chapman is they know what pitch is coming, and it wasn't as hard as it's been, right? So he was able to get out in front and just kind of line it over the wall, like loft it over the wall.
Rajai Davis hit 12 homers in the regular season.
There you go. Plus
but
four.
That's still not a lot. He had 43. He had 43 steals. He was there for his stolen bases.
Yeah, of course. And also because the other guy that they brought in to play center field couldn't play defense, so they went back to Davis. I forget his name, the rookie.
Martinez?
No. Hold on.
And by the way, that homer that Davis hit in Game 7, that was his only homer in the postseason.
Yeah, I'm sure it was. I mean, look, he's not known for his power. Like you said, he's known for his defense. And he did the job, you know?
Now, that play in Game 6...
The guy I'm talking about is Naquin, Tyler Naquin. Okay. He was brutal in the outfield.
I was just going to say,
him and Chisenhall, they couldn't communicate. There was a ball, literally a routine fly ball into right center that just dropped in for no reason.
Yeah, and that changed. That's what decided Game 6.
Yeah, and I think they took him out because the other outfielders did not have confidence in him. You know, like, you can't have a guy out there who's like just going rogue and he's not communicating, or well, I don't know what was going on out there. But there was another play in the same game, another fly ball to right field where they almost collided, and Naquin just came in and he didn't call him off, and then Chisenhall caught it, and I was like, what the hell, this identical play, this time Chisenhall just said, forget it, I'm not backing off, right? So they had the luxury of having Coco Crisp, so they put him instead and moved Davis to center. But it was definitely a World Series for the ages. I mean, God, I'm going to miss the playoff baseball. There's no doubt.
You know, I'm just trying to think. So this was a crazy exciting World Series, and you and I were glued to it. And I'm sure other, you know, obviously Cubs fans and Indians fans were glued to it. It's rare that when you're watching any sporting event, if your team isn't in it, that you actually care so much. But I actually cared. And, you've heard all the stories and seen all the stories about all these Cubs fans who have been suffering for hundreds of years. Actually, I mean, most of them weren't even alive, obviously, the last time they did win. But I was trying to think as I'm watching the game, and the last game was hard for me to actually stay awake because of the rain delay, and it went into extra innings and it was late and I was exhausted. I was trying to think, as exciting as it was, if the Expos were playing in that situation, I would be freaking out entire time.
Yeah, because if you didn't have you didn't have a rooting interest so much for either team. But think about some people in Chicago or Cleveland. They must be going mental. Those poor people in Cleveland, I mean, God.
Listen, they just won an NBA championship.
They did.
I don't feel so
bad
for them.
They did. Did you see, I posted the Kyle Schwarber dance video on our website?
I did. By the way, there's some typos on the website.
Don't talk about that here. I know. I have to fix it up. I posted the Kyle Schwarber video on the website, so, and also this amazing Eddie Vedder Cubs tribute song, which you should listen to.
The Skip and Josh Sports Show is back.
Do you have anything else about the World Series? I mean, I don't know. I think I probably can go on and on and on, but I mean,
I don't really have much more about the World Series. I do have a What Bugs Me if we want to do that.
Let's do it.
You're kidding me? Boy, are you bugging me, man? I'm going to nail. I'm getting bugged now. Whoa, man.
So what bugs me, and now that the World Series is over, the Major League Baseball is going to be announcing their award winners for MVP and Cy Young and Rookie of the Year and Manager of the Year and all those awards. And so everyone's saying how in the National League, Bryant is going to win the MVP. And he did have a very good season. And he was on, obviously, the best team in the league. What bugs me is that oftentimes there are players who have really good stats, and just because they play on bad teams, they don't even get consideration for awards. So this year, for example, and I'm gonna look it up right now. In my opinion, the player who should win the MVP should be Nolan Arenado on
Colorado.
On Colorado, thank you. If you compare Arenado's stats to Bryant's stats, and I'm gonna do that in a few seconds here, as soon as my computer speeds up. Okay, where is it?
Arenado had 41 homers, 133 RBIs. Bryant had 39 homers, 102 RBIs. And they both had a similar batting average.
So there you go.
I guess your definition of MVP is like whoever has like the best numbers?
Yes.
Or is it like most valuable to his team, regardless of how good the team is?
It's definitely not most valuable to his team, because if it was, then there's 30 different guys who should win it, because even if you're the worst team, there is a guy who's most valuable to that team.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah.
So it should be the most valuable player in the league. And yeah, I mean, Arenado had a higher batting average, I think. Yes, he did, by a couple of points. But he had, like you said, 133 ribbies. Bryant had 102. That's a big difference.
Yeah, I know, but I think the Colorado, I mean, you bring up a bad example maybe of a Colorado guy, in that I think that the Colorado, when people see big numbers in Colorado, they tend to downplay it a little bit because of the park effect. But, I mean,
that's a fair point.
Yeah, but I mean, I guess it's going to be Bryant, right? I mean, you're right. I don't know. When did this phenomenon start of player had to be on a winning team?
I don't know, the last 10 years, I think.
Like, I remember when we were in our teens, 20s, it's like, you kind of just looked at the league, looked at the stats, and you knew who the MVP was going to be. I remember, like, one year, it was like, oh, yeah, Mike Schmidt's going to be the MVP. Or, like, oh, Dale Murphy. Or, you know, like, it always seemed, like, fairly obvious. Like, I never remember, like, hearing all these debates, but now it's like, oh, is he most valuable to his team? Who has the best numbers? I mean, if you really look at who's most valuable to his team, I mean, it's probably Clayton Kershaw. He's the most valuable to his team.
I wouldn't give MVP to a pitcher. I
wouldn't either. I wouldn't either. But you know what I mean? Like, he's the most valuable to his team. Or maybe it's Big Poppy. I don't know. Like,
in any case, that's what bugs me.
So who's going to be the MVP in the American League? Is it going to be Big Poppy?
It might be. I think it's going to be someone on the Red Sox. I don't know if it's going to be Big Poppy.
Yeah.
But if you look at...
should be Mark Trumbo, right?
Trumbo.
Or Encarnacion.
Trumbo didn't have such a good batting average.
Yeah. Big E, double E.
He did have a good season.
Yeah.
But there's also on Boston, Mookie Betts.
Oh, yeah, Mookie. Yeah, the Mooks.
You know, he had...
He had great stats.
He hit well over 300. He had... over 30 homers, over 100 ribbies, and he was excellent defensively. The one thing about Ortiz, he doesn't play in the field. I don't think, you know, that's a factor.
Yeah,
when you're only playing half the game.
I would say, I think, not that I... Who do I think should be MVP? I don't know. Don't really care, but I think it's going to be David Ortiz. I think
it will be, because it was his last season, because he's 40 years old, and he didn't have a bad year.
Yeah.
So it's not like they're just giving it to him as a courtesy, like a parting gift.
But, you know, in other sports, this is even more predominant, right? Because In basketball, the MVP is always on a team that you can never ever. You have to be on a winning team to be the MVP in basketball. It's like it's impossible.
Now, in fairness to Ortiz, he did lead the league in ribbies. He did hit over 300, so it's not like he had a bad year. So if he does win the MVP, I'm not going to argue that one.
Right. I hear you.
Interesting that the two guys who were tied for the lead in ribbies in the American League, both DHs, although Edwin Encarnacion played a lot of first base in the second half of the season.
He did, and he will. Well, we'll see what team he's on. Well, not next year when he'll be on the Red Sox. He'll be DHing all full time next year.
It's the Red Sox, I think, are just going to open the vault and give him what he wants, which is unfortunate.
Well, I mean, are you a Jays fan or?
I'm not a Jays fan, but I mean, I like to see players stay on the teams they're on. I hate it when teams, you know, go and spend crazy money. It usually doesn't work out. Like if you look at it, when the Red Sox spent all that money on Pablo Sandoval, it didn't work out for them.
Yeah.
When the Angels spent all that money on Albert Pujols, it didn't work out for them.
No, players really should ignore their agents a little more and look at the situation they're in and say, am I in a good situation here? Like Pujols, he was on St. Louis. He had no reason to leave, right? Mm. Am I in a good situation here? Yeah. Am I in a winning team? Yeah. Do I have a better chance here? Yeah. Like, just stick around, you know? That's what's interesting about the Cubs is they're so young that this team could be together for a while.
They will.
Right? I mean, Rizzo, Bryant, that's the cornerstone of their franchise for forever.
Except
Baez and Russell, I mean, that looks like a double play combination for who knows how long. They have this guy Contreras, who's a huge catching prospect. So
except I remember a time when the Expos were supposed to be the team of the 80s and never did anything.
I know.
So,
yeah, that's true.
So you can't say, oh, they're going to win, you know, 5, 6, 7 championships because injuries happen and Lester and Lackey are old and the Cubs still don't have a bullpen. So it's, you know, they did win and they were the best team, but there's still some things they have to work on in the offseason.
Dan Marino got to the Super Bowl in his rookie year or second year, and they lost. And he's like, I've seen many interviews with him where he'll say, like, I just assumed I'd be back to many more Super Bowls. I just assumed I'd be in, like, that was just the first one. I'll get him next time. And then he never made it back, right? So good on the Cubs. Congratulations to them.
To add to my point about the MVP always being on a good team or not even considering MVPs who are on bad teams, a really good player who had an amazing career, who I think is in the Hall of Fame, who never won an MVP because he was always on a bad team, is Tony Gwynn.
That's a good example.
And I'm pretty sure, considering he's in the Hall of Fame, he must have had a few good seasons somewhere in there that he could have been the MVP.
He had a good season every year. The guy's like a .350 lifetime batting average.
Exactly. But he played on San Diego, so no one knew about him.
Yeah.
So guys like that deserve consideration. That's all I'm saying.
I just looked it up. The only time he was close to MVP was the year they made it to the World Series. So it goes to show, oh, if your team's winning, yeah, maybe he might be the MVP. But he had great years every single other year. And they never considered him, right? And he was probably most valuable to his team more than anybody, this guy.
For sure. Yeah. Because he was the only guy in the order. That's the other thing. If you don't have good players hitting behind you or hitting in front of you to drive in, that it makes it even more impressive that you were able to put up those numbers.
Yeah. That's why when they put Schwarber batting second, I think it changed their order in the World Series.
It's easy to put up good numbers when you've got like 5, 6 guys in the order that are hitting well. It's not easy to put up good numbers when you got schlubs in your batting lineup.
Yeah, for sure. Schlubs.
Schlubs, yes. We know what schlubs are.
Of course. So I wanted to ask you, you texted me and my wife simultaneously the other day about an iron.
Yes, I texted you and your wife and about 15 other people. I needed to buy an iron. I've never purchased one. I've never owned one. And I didn't know what would be a good brand to buy. And so I was trying to get consensus from about 15 different people. Unfortunately, most of the people who responded just told me to get the cheapest one there, which isn't what I ended up doing. Ended up going to Canadian Tire, and they had, I don't know, 8 different kinds. And there was one that was regular $100, and it was on sale for $60. So I bought that one.
Oh, $60 iron. Your shirts are going to be like gold.
Well, I used it once already, and just because the iron is good, the person using it has to know what they're doing, and I don't. So
in your life, you never owned an iron?
I never owned an iron. I've ironed a few times. Once I was at a hotel and I used the iron at the hotel. And once when I was still living at home, I used my parents' iron. It's not as easy as it looks.
Of course, it's very hard.
So I used it, and you know, I'll be using it again, and we'll see how that goes.
You should invest in these shirts that you see on TV, these no wrinkle shirts.
The shirts, it's funny you say that, because the shirts I buy now, they all say non-iron shirts, so you don't have to iron them.
That's a lie.
It is a lie.
That's a lie.
To be honest, most of the non-iron shirts I have, I just take them out of the dryer and I don't need to iron them. But I bought one recently. I won't mention the name brand because I don't want to trash anybody.
Trash them.
But I bought one recently, last time I was in the States, and it says non-iron. And I took it out and it was completely wrinkled. Like I had no choice. It was because of that shirt that I actually went out and bought the iron.
Oof, huge.
So.
All right. Well, when I come to Toronto in, I think in, when am I coming? 3 weeks-ish?
Mm-hmm.
I'll try out your iron.
Okay. You're welcome to.
All right. So I'll, we'll speak to you next time.
Okay.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye.
The Skip and Josh Sports Show is over now. Don't worry. There'll be another episode soon.